The voice of the intelligence is drowned out by the roar of fear. It is ignored by the voice of desire. It is contradicted by the voice of shame. It is biased by hate and extinguished by anger. Most of all, it is silenced by ignorance. And this week's opening quote comes from Carl Menninger. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. About 6 years ago, in 2012, I put out a film called Transformation. In that film, I was discussing the rising transhumanist agenda and where we were being led by the technology that we were allowing to be superimposed over our lives. And I use that term because really that's the way it's being done. Now, when I made that film, a lot of people told me I was going right out on a limb with what I was saying, that all of this AI technocratic future was not really going to happen. I was just being paranoid. But what we see in the world today is that everything that I put in that film has come to pass. In fact, a lot more has come to pass. And the system really has been rolling forward in leaps and bounds, and the control grid is rolling out now exponentially. It's rolling out underneath everything else with all the other theatre that's going on in the world, and it just seems to be something that people are not really noticing. I mean, we do have a lot of stuff to pay attention to. We have a great many theatres of distraction, which are all put there on purpose, of course. And there's a lot of people that are sitting back thinking something wonderful is going to happen soon, there's going to be major change soon, mainly due to the Q operation. And the Q operation has been a very interesting thing to look at, because there is an awful lot of truth contained within the Q narrative. So it's been kind of good like that, in as much as it's something that can be used to play to the neighbours next door, and they may actually see the level of corruption we're dealing with, so it does have that amount of truth in it. But there is also a lot of shifting of blame and disinformation and sidestepping and leading people to a certain direction that is contained within the Q narrative as well. Very notably, it covers and contains elements of almost every currently popular and every provable conspiracy theory in existence, just about. So that has made the entire narrative enormously popular with the conspiracy movement and elements of the independent media. In fact, one of the most revealing things about the Q narrative is that it tells people exactly what they want to hear. And though it does address some very real and very serious and very factual issues, it omits many others. And due to the importance of these issues, such as the smart grid, the IoT, social crediting, they become quite glaring by their omissions. Because with everything that I'm seeing in the Q narrative, I'm seeing an awful lot of describing of how things got this bad and how we got to this point and how the crime system works, but I'm not seeing any remedy that's being offered. The only remedy that is being offered by the Q narrative is trust the plan, sit back and do nothing, we got this. Essentially, what they're asking people to do is to believe in the state and allow the state to fix the problems created by the state. So people are just watching the theatrics and thinking that the world is going to change without them really having to participate in it. And again, underneath all of this is the smart grid rolling out, continuing to roll out underneath the carpet while nobody's looking, and everyone is participating in this smart grid, and it is the smart grid itself which is the New World Order. And in the face of the smart grid, it isn't going to matter who is president in the White House or who is prime minister of any country. None of it's going to be relevant at all. It won't matter. They'll just be figureheads because the whole thing will be run by algorithms. You see, that's what people aren't really seeing, and they're not taking into account when they're looking at all this. I mean, so many people are in fear of the system, and they're just sitting there clinging onto this hope that some politician is going to change things by mass arrests and eliminating certain people from the equation. But they're not looking at what the system is, where it's all been leading, what it was all about when it was begun, like when they introduced technology into the human experience with the introduction of television and the way it's just progressed from that point from 50, 60 years ago. It's all been leading to this point right now, This ultimate control system, this digitized AI algorithm-controlled social crediting system they want to roll out, it's always been leading towards that. Right since the beginning, it's always been about the control grid. It wasn't just about making things convenient for us and giving us this newfangled technology and television and all these great sparkly things. It was about leading us into a technological control grid, leading us into a technocracy. That is what it was always about, right since the beginning. And what they're doing at the moment with the Q operation is not only are they externalizing the hierarchy so that everyone can see the corruption for themselves, so they can see the need to address the situation, they're just bringing out the remedy that they think everyone will buy into, which is to get rid of all these terrible people that we've put out there for you to hate, put a new face on the coin, and lead you into this new safe reality. But it's where they've been leading the whole time, and the whole thing has been theatre for the masses, folks. Donald Trump is simply the trump card that they've played to keep everybody distracted and make everybody think they're being led to safety when Trump is not addressing any of the real issues. He's not addressing the smart grid. He's not addressing 5G. He's not addressing social crediting. And that is the system. The smart grid, transhumanism, augmented humans, mind mapping, mind control. They're talking about soon you'll be able to upload your emotions onto Facebook. Not just use an emoticon, but actually upload your emotions. So people will be able to experience your emotional content with your posts. And of course, people will need additions and augmentation to do this, but hey, if their friends are doing it, well, won't you want to do it? You don't want to be a lesser person, do you? Oh my God, look, Mary just uploaded her emotions. Can you feel how she felt when she got that present that I gave her? Wasn't that wonderful? I mean, you don't have the enhancement. Oh my God, you're a lesser person. I don't think I want to talk to you much anymore. I'll go and hang around with these real people who have got the upgrades so that we can all converse on a real level and you can stay behind in your normality. We don't really want that. So peer group pressure will lead kids into this. Just because one person's got it, everybody will want to have it. But what happens when you have this ability to be able to upload your emotions onto Facebook or into a computer? Because it's a two-way street. Every door opens both ways. So if you can upload your emotions to something, then what emotions can be downloaded into you, whether you want them to be or not, or even whether you're aware of that being done or not? How will you ever know if what you're feeling is what you should be feeling and whether it actually comes from you? Very reminiscent of people taking their soma in 1984, just to make sure they're happy all the time. And this is the sort of stuff that they're talking about now in the mainstream. You know, uploading your emotions into computers and experiencing other people's emotions via social media. And all this is being presented as something really attractive and really beneficial for people. And again, folks, the politicians, the Q narrative, nothing that is going on in the political theatre is dealing with any of this. And you think they're not taking it this way? Well, they are, folks, because they're talking about it. And we've been talking about it for years, but now they're actually openly talking about it on the mainstream, which means they're already there, because if they weren't already there, then they wouldn't be talking about it. They always tell you, oh, we think this might be possible in 10 years. That means they can already do it. That's the way it goes. And they've been promoting this for quite a long time, folks. If you look at things like Transcendent Man, Ray Kurzweil, the way he talks about how we will soon be in a world where everything is infused with nanotech, everything is intelligent. Look at the interfaces they're creating, new gaming platforms. You can actually control the game with your mind. You can think and the character in the game will simply go where you want him to go. You've got the growth of sex robots now to completely split the genders as much as they can. The final blow to the genders, the final end game for population control. So all of this has been put into people's minds. You've got people talking about upgrades, how we need to upgrade ourselves and merge with AI to even make it possible for us to survive what's coming. Look at Elon Musk's neural net, the whole cashless grid which is rolling out. And it's rolling out in leaps and bounds, ladies and gentlemen. They've just introduced new facial recognition tills at supermarkets so that those supermarkets you can go in and shop cashlessly at, you can go and serve yourself at the automatic tills in supermarkets that they've got these days, the automatic checkouts. Now they have put facial recognition on there, so you can get an app on your phone and you can Walk up to the screen, it will look at your face and automatically deduct the money from your account. Facial recognition in supermarkets, folks, and soon you won't be able to shop at a supermarket without facial recognition. Look at where the whole thing is leading, and then ask yourself how any politician is going to make a shred of difference in this smart grid and what is coming. I mean, they could if they were to address it, but they're not. They're just not addressing it at all, so they're not going to make any difference whatsoever. It's not going to come from any political arena, which is where the entire Q narrative falls apart. And seriously, folks, if you think Trump's got your back and Trump really cares about people, just look at the support that he gives to the rogue state of Israel and look at the attitude he's just taken towards Saudi Arabia in their assassination of Khashoggi. He's more worried about losing $100 billion worth of arms sales to Saudi Arabia than actually doing the right thing. And look at Saudi Arabia. What's it doing with these $100 billion worth of arms that the United States is supplying it with? It's devastating Yemen, carrying out genocide on a scale unprecedented. We're expecting 10 to 13 million people to die of starvation in Yemen before the end of this year due to Trump's support of this rogue Zionist state. He doesn't give a damn about that. He's more worried about American jobs in bomb factories. More worried about the blood money he can get for the US economy, which he then siphons off and gives to the state of Israel. $38 billion they gave to Israel the other day. You got up to 4,000 homeless people in the center of LA now. There's a typhus outbreak in the center of LA due to the amount of homeless and the amount of rubbish on the streets that simply isn't being taken care of, but no money to alleviate that situation. Instead of that, we'll give $38 billion to Israel, in fact, more support to Israel than any other president in US history, still funding ISIS and the terrorist organizations in Syria, sending endless support to Saudi Arabia so they can genocide the people of Yemen, reintroducing sanctions against the people of Iran, flexing his muscles towards Russia and China and banging the drums of war as much as possible, installing what looks like a war cabinet in the United States, approving fracking in California, and just allowing the smart grid to be rolled out underneath everything. And people are still supporting this man, thinking that Q is going to come and save the day. But how is the Q narrative going to change anything? All it's going to do is get the truth community to accept martial law for a little while, as if it's going to be a little while. Yes, yes, just a little bit of martial law so we can have mass arrests and the whole world will be healed. And there's so many plays at the moment, so much division, left and right. The paradigm is being forced on the people as much as possible. You've even got Soros out there now calling for people to rise up and overthrow Donald Trump. Did you notice that? What a joke. What a play. Just to make people think that, oh, anybody who must be criticizing Trump must be working for Soros. Play the left against the right. Keep the theater going, folks. That's what it's all about. And make people believe that mass arrests are going to save the world when the whole thing is simply a puppet show. And again, how can people seriously believe the state is going to save them from the state? How arresting anybody is going to make any difference in this? Now, the only thing that's going to stop the smart grid and the whole control grid and the whole New World Order from coming online is if we stop participating in our own slavery. That's the only thing that's going to make a difference and lead the world to a better place. This is what I've been saying for 10 years on the show, that it's got to come from the hearts of the people. That's the only place real change can come from, because that's the only place it exists, is in the hearts of the people. But people are just too willing to sit back and be led to safety. People want safety, but they don't want to have to participate in creating that safety themselves. They want a politician to do it. Just send me the newsletter to tell me that I'm safe now and I'll feel safe. That's what it's always been about for so many people. And really, that's not the way to freedom, and that's not going to achieve anything, no matter what any politician does. Because politicians aren't the problem. The problem is the system itself. Politicians are just the figureheads, the puppet show that's put in place for us to shake our fist at and vote in and vote out or whatever. I mean, sure, they're the ones that write all the legislation that allows the corruption to happen, all the legislation we believe controls us, but ultimately, they're just a puppet show. The system itself is the problem, and that system is the authoritarian-based control system, which is moving into digital and moving into AI-controlled. The politicians have just been there to control the puppet show and control the rabble to lead us into this technocracy, but once we're in there, they're irrelevant from that point, folks. That's what people don't really see. The whole thing is theatre, and that Trump is just a player, just the latest face on the same old coin. I don't know, but it's just amazing that people can't see this. They're just swallowing the Kool-Aid litre by litre. How can they believe that all these politicians have been corrupt for so many years, but here comes this one guy who's just got it all together? You know, the mental matrix that controls people is so thick and so profound and so well constructed that the reality is that people who believe a politician can actually save them from the matrix simply do not know what the matrix is. You know, in referring to even the movie The Matrix, one of the most profound lines that was said throughout that entire trilogy of movies was when Morpheus said, "The Matrix is a prison for your mind." Because that is exactly what it is. And that is why people need a politician to save them. That's why people think that someone like Trump has to come along to lead them to safety. They don't see that the Matrix only exists in their mind. The control that they are under only exists in their mind. People believe they need an external savior because they believe the control grid is something that is external to themselves, but it isn't. Because the Matrix only exists due to people's belief that the Matrix is real. You know, people look at the system and they see it as something external to themselves that they need to push against and fight against. And the old adage of that which you fight against becomes more powerful is completely true. You don't need to fight against the system. All you need to do is to start believing in yourself, to rediscover yourself, rediscover your humanity. As I've been saying for 10 years on this show, the problem is a loss of self. And this is with every single person out there. People don't understand the power they have. They don't understand the authority that exists, that controls them, is a fiction. It only exists in their mind because they've been taught to believe the system is real. They've been taught to look outside of themselves for that which exists inside. It's all due to your disconnection from who you are. That is the key to the whole thing, and it is due to this disconnect that would even cause you to begin to believe that someone has any authority over you to start with. This is why people are sitting back waiting for Trump to make some bold move that's going to lead the world to safety. They don't realize that it's all in their head. It's all in their mind. And if people could break down the barriers with the people around them, their neighbors, the people of the towns they live in, and start supporting each other and pull their support away from the system, it would cease to exist in a single day. That's the thing. You know, people don't pull away from it because they live in fear of reprisals from the police or from the government. But if you've built ties with the people around you, ties with your community, and you all stand together, there would be no reprisal from police or government. There can be none. Because if the entire race does it, if the entire country does it, then there's nothing the politicians can do. You know, their authority only exists because we believe it's there. And we fight externally, and the more we fight against it, the more it enslaves us. You don't have to fight against it, just don't comply with your own slavery. Just disconnect from it and look at your life and ask yourself a few basic questions about how you're living your life and how reality works. You know, and even when I say that, a lot of people misconstrue it. They think by saying disconnect from the system, I'm saying go out and build a hippie commune or something like that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm simply suggesting that people stop complying with their own slavery. You don't have to use the smart grid, folks. You don't have to use all this tech. You don't have to comply with what the government is doing. You don't have to comply with vaccination laws and all this stuff they do. Ask the questions. Stand up for yourself. You know, why do you believe that people have a right of ownership over you? Why do you continue to follow all these rules and do all these things that you don't want to do and simply allow the system to go forward the way it is when you have a choice? You have a choice to do other things. You have a choice to stay home with your family, to grow a garden, to live the life that you want to live. You have a choice to disconnect from this system. Everybody has the choice to do it. And you might think, well, no, I don't. I need to work. I need to put food on the table. Okay, I can appreciate people are in that position, but you still don't need to be on your smartphone all day. You still don't need to be shopping with digital currency all the time. You still don't need to be using smart devices and smart supermarkets. You mean you can still surf the internet and do the things you want to do without participating in the smart grid, and when people push you and make you walk between the lines, you could just ask why. And simply asking why is a good thing to do because it will encourage other people to ask why, because you'll find that once one person displays a little bit of backbone and stands up for themselves, a lot of people are going to say, hey, yeah, that's a good idea, and they're going to do the same thing. People have just been trained not to, and they're too scared to poke their heads up because they want to see someone else do it first. So I want to lead the way. I certainly do when I go to council meetings and have any dealings with these people at all. I do not pull any punches in my conversations with authority, or those who believe they have authority anyway, because I simply don't believe that any exists. And that's the way I approach people. I approach them as my equal, and I treat them the way I would expect to be treated if I'd done something as hideous as what these people are doing. And I have no qualms in doing so. And simply by doing that, you encourage other people to do the same. It's really a powerful thing, displaying righteous anger in the right situation and doing it in a wholesome way. You know, anger can be bad if we allow it to overtake us and we respond with violence, but anger is simply an emotion, and it's a valid emotion, the same as any other emotion, and when it's approached correctly and channeled correctly, you know, sometimes anger can be channeled into something very beneficial. And in fact, in many ways, when you look at our society, it's people's failure to get angry which has caused a lot of the problems. Again, this is due to political correctness, due to programming, due to our education system. We're taught that we shouldn't really display emotions too much. And if we have a problem with someone, we need to be diplomatic and politically correct rather than simply calling things for what they are. And if people were allowed to be in touch with their emotions and connected to their emotions and taught to express their emotions and understand their emotions and what they mean and how they can be expressed, if they had a better command of the language so perhaps they could express their emotions properly, then I would suggest people would have healed this situation long ago, because people would have been outraged at what they see before them, and they would have done something about it, because in the face of this system, how can any sane and rational person not feel anger? And really, the anger that you feel in the face of this type of corruption is wholesome, righteous anger that you have every right to feel and every right to express. In any normal world where natural law prevailed, we would have healed this situation long ago simply by being in touch with our emotions and recognizing them for what they are and respecting the lessons that they can teach us. And even thinking about that, if people had the correct command of the language so they could express their emotions properly, the problem is it really can't be done within the English language. And I think back to the show that I did recently talking about Attila Flink and the Magyar language. You know, when you look at the Magyar, look at Hungarian, these sorts of languages, Hungarian has 48 letters in the alphabet, folks. In Finnish and Hungarian, these sorts of languages, there are 50 different ways to say the word snow, because there are different types of snow. In Hungarian and Magyar, these types of languages, you can express every single nuance of human emotion right down to the finest detail. And these ancient languages are very significant, ladies and gentlemen. You know, as I've shared with you before, it's said that by singing certain words in Sanskrit, you can change the color of a candle flame. And when you look at that, and when you consider the fact that Magyar, being based in the word magi, the whole concept of magic and the weaving of spells and what language can really do, what we can achieve with words and what we could really achieve if we were to understand our emotions, you begin to see why this language was wiped out, why they didn't want anyone to know there was a root language, and why they've replaced virtually the entire worldwide language with English. In the West, anyway, they've taught everybody English because English disconnects you from your higher senses. It disconnects you from reality. There's no way to convey spiritual understandings in English because the words simply don't exist. You need to write a thesis to explain a simple emotion to someone that you could explain to them with a word if you were speaking Hungarian or Magyar. Now, when you start taking these things into account, when you really start looking at what this matrix is, this system of mind control that has us so ensnared, and then you begin to start taking things like the loss of this root language, the loss of Magyar, which I believe should more correctly be pronounced Magyar, so perhaps I should start doing that. But when you start looking at the possibilities of what we could achieve with a higher understanding of our emotions and a higher understanding of reality if we had the words to explain these things that we feel that we can't explain. It really does begin to make sense of how controlled we've become. You know, the splinter that's in the back of your mind, that thing that you can feel that you don't know how to explain. It's because people are controlled. Their concept of reality is based on their understanding of reality, and their understanding of reality is based on the words that they use to describe it. And if the words that you're using simply don't describe reality properly, and the words that could describe reality simply don't exist anymore, then how can you ever describe reality? How can you ever understand it? How can you ever comprehend it? Because we spell our reality. We can only base our understanding of reality based on the words that we know which describe those things to us. But if the words don't exist, then how can we explain the things that we see and the things that we feel? Sure, the language exists emotionally, but we're not taught to even believe that language exists. We're completely locked out of our right brain. We're taught to only understand and explain reality through the words that we use to explain it. But what happens when those words are not there? What happens when they don't exist? You start looking at things like 1984, when they took the words for rebellion and dissent out of the language, so people knew there was something wrong, but they didn't know how to convey that feeling to anybody else. They knew they wanted to rebel, but they didn't have a word for rebellion. So they didn't know how to tell everybody that we need to rise up against the system because these words didn't exist. So therefore, the understanding, the comprehension can never exist, and so the concept can never exist. And when you look at that and you see how it was described in 1984, and people think, well, this was the future that they want to present to us. No, it is the future that we are in now. Even when we look at the Dark Ages, we think, oh, this period where nobody knew what was going on. The Dark Ages is now. We are currently in the Dark Ages. People think because they've got instant communication, they've got access to all this information, they're suddenly enlightened. No, they're not. Because what they're being fed is controlled information designed to close their minds into this matrix. Nobody has a clue what is going on in this world. Nobody has a clue what this reality is. Nobody has a clue what their history is, where we came from, or really where we're going in most cases. People don't like to be told that, but it's an unfortunate truth. We don't know where we came from. We have no clue what our history is. All we've got is snippets that have been given to us. We've got books to read, all of which have been fabricated. If you go and travel out around the world and look at all the evidence, all of this history is wrong. So we don't have anything to go on. All we've got is this system of control. And again, this entire system of control only exists within our minds. If we could just wake up and shake the sleep out of our eyes one morning, the whole world could change. And all it would really take, again, is for people to really comprehend who and what they are and just connect with themselves the way we once were. Anyway, folks, I think we have reached break time here, so I better leave it there for now and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so life has always been a spiritual journey for me, with all the hurdles, with all the ups and downs, with all the different professions that I've had along the way, if that's what you can call them, all the different things I've done to find a way through. It's always been a spiritual journey, and there's always been these questions gnawing at the back of my mind. Ever since I was a very small child, I had questions in the back of my mind. As I've shared with you on the show many times, when I was 4 years old and I found out that we had to pay for land and actually pay to be alive, I completely freaked out and thought that I'd been born into the wrong world. I thought everybody around me was completely mad. But what that discovery really did to me more than anything was cause me to question. It really is what set me off on the path of discovery that I've been on ever since. You know, the quest to try to put some meaning to this whole experience. And even when I sit back now and look at the past, I see that's why I had so many different professions along the way, because I found it difficult to fit in anywhere because I was always concerned with the direction of my moral compass. I was always concerned with the spiritual journey more than the economic journey. I always wondered why we had to do this, why we had to pay to be alive, why I had to work at some job I didn't like just to collect paper so I could have stuff that was growing all around me and stuff that was already here. I could never figure out how the world got to where it was and how it fitted in with actually being a human being, how being a human being had anything to do with these societies we live in, even how human beings could have constructed these societies. Because really, when I look at mankind and I look at how the human mind works and I look at what we would be doing if we were left to our natural devices, I can't see how we would ever come up with anything like a city. Well, modern cities anyway. I mean, you know, I can understand why we would have places such as Machu Picchu or some of the ancient structures, Moray, Angkor Wat, Chichen Itza, all sorts of places that have temple mounts and areas of gathering and all this sort of stuff, even places such as the Giza complex. But when you look at modern cities, look at New York, look at LA, look at any modern city, look at France, Paris, any of these cities, how do these serve humankind in any way, shape or form? They only work within this economic system. And the question is, how do we come up with these things? How do we allow ourselves to be led into this? Is this something that we would have led ourselves into naturally? You know, if mankind was ever left to its natural resources, are we simply to assume that it would be a simple matter of course that we would eventually come up with something like a modern city? Anything that made us so dependent upon the system, it doesn't seem to serve us at all. I can't see how cities and the social systems or nations or any of the stuff that we have, I can't see how it serves people in any way, shape or form. I mean, and even looking at nations, sure, look, I can understand why there would be different groups from different areas, say, like across Europe. You know, you've got the French people, you've got the German people, you've got the Hungarian people, you've got the Austrian people. I can understand that they would want their own regions and be in their own clans and keep their genetic heritage sound, and all that used to be that way for years on end, eons. I mean, that's the way it was. But you didn't need borders and governments for that. It was just, well, you knew this was Germany because everyone here speaks German. You know that's France over there because everybody speaks French. So you don't need to have borders because you know where you come from, you know who your people are. And you don't need to go to war with anybody because there's no financial system, so no one's in a state of scarcity. It's a world of abundance, so why do you need to go to war with somebody else to take resources that are growing right here and usable right here? You know, even in the old days, when you look at this sort of stuff, most of the wars that were waged between tribes and all this sort of stuff were waged over women, usually a love affair. Usually just someone got jealous and things turned pear-shaped. And you look at the roots, and it was simply because someone from one country fell in love with someone from another country and other people didn't approve. You know, we only have nations set up the way we have because of the economic system, the way everybody's nation is based on their economic worth, and so they need to segregate themselves from everybody else and exploit everybody else they can to try to climb to the top of the pile. And it's a huge scam, ladies and gentlemen. Because in a normal world, people would generally be living within their own race and within their own culture, and they'd be happy to be that way, and they wouldn't want to go and live in another culture unless perhaps it was a novel thing they'd do for a while or whatever. But you wouldn't go there and try to create your own culture within their culture. You'd go there to enjoy their culture and perhaps bring some of the stuff back to share with your own culture. You know, the whole modern concept of nation and borders, it's just due to this economic system that we're so subservient to. Another banker's construct. But of course, this is a very delicate topic to broach because people are very concerned about their borders. They're very concerned about what's going on in the world, and they think that they need strong national security, and they're always concerned about the whole open borders concept. But when people are concerned with open borders and they get worried about that sort of stuff, they're looking at it within the current paradigm, within the current system of nations and economics and war and all of this stuff that we got, which is all a complete construct and has nothing whatsoever to do with being a human being living on the earth. It's all centered around the economic model, which is designed to place nations against each other, place people against each other, place everybody against everybody, because it keeps everybody in a state of shortage and scarcity where they need to live in a state of constant competition rather than a state of normal and everyday cooperation, which is what we would be living in were it not for this economic system. But anyway, that's probably getting a little out there for most people, sort of esoteric thinking. A lot of people are going to hear that and go, oh my God, Max is promoting open borders. And no, folks, I'm not. You're just not listening. You know, it goes way beyond that. It goes way beyond the concept of nations and borders and governments and all of that sort of stuff. I mean, all of these things are constructs. They are. If you didn't have nations and borders and governments, you wouldn't have war. What are you going to go to war with? Another nation? Well, if the other nation isn't there, if it's all one big world, who are you going to war with? What for? You know, the whole thing has been contrived to be this way. Yeah, and we do so much of it as well. When you look at it, look at the arms production of the United States, you look at the amount of wars and the amount of devastation you see around the world. This is our major pastime. This is our major activity as a human race, is killing other humans. What for? What's it all about? And it's not even us that wants to do it. It's not even the people. It's the governments that create all of these scenarios, and then they grab sons and daughters out of their population and they send them off to foreign places to kill other people's sons and daughters. And they say they're doing it in the name of national security and to protect our borders and to keep us all safe. How is going and killing people around the world keeping anyone safe? How is supplying weapons to Saudi Arabia so they can genocide the people in Yemen keeping the people of the United States safe? How is funding ISIS and mercenary forces in Syria to overthrow the Syrian government and create all of these refugees to invade Europe and create people with a chip on both shoulders who want to blow up anybody from the West because their whole family was killed by them? How is doing this making America safe? How's it making anybody safe? How's the actions of any government from any country doing anything that's making the people safe? I'd love it if someone could explain it to me, because I really cannot see the need for these people. In fact, I can trace most of the problems we have in the world today to the actions of these people. And again, simply due to the loss of self of the population, because everyone is stuck in this matrix, this belief that the system that enslaves them is actually real, and they have to do what they're told. And in attempting to understand how all this works, folks, it's important to understand that reality is a mirror. You know, if we live ourselves, if we live our lives in a state of fear, in a state of subservience, in a state of belief that authority is real, then that authority manifests just by matter of course. It wouldn't matter if government wasn't even there. If you were in a situation where you were in a group of four or five people and suddenly you perceived one of those people to have authority over you, that would give them authority over you, simply by your belief that they have it. That's how it works. And it's the same with government. It's due to our belief that these people can rule us that they're able to do so. Of course, there's police and all sorts of people that keep you in line if you step outside those lines, but that's because people, when they do step outside the lines, they want to protest, they want to march, they want to do some violent action against government rather than simply disconnecting from it, staying home, doing something else, living your life the way you would like to live it rather than the way you're told to live it. That doesn't mean going out and hurting people and breaking laws and doing all sorts of stuff like that. It just means you don't support the system anymore. You don't buy the smart technology. You don't support the control grid. You don't shop with credit cards. You just don't allow yourself to be led into this stuff. You just say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else. If the politicians are legislating that I have to do this, well, I'd like to know who that politician was so I can press charges against them. Just start ruffling feathers that way and see what sort of success you get. See what sort of response you get from people. And just point out, you know, I can't do this because it's not what I want to do with my life. It's not what anybody wants to do with our lives. And politicians are legislating that we have to do this. Well, that's not what we employed them to do. So we need to start taking action against them. Seeing as how you're a police officer, well, I'll report the crime to you. Yeah, just have that attitude. See what happens. I mean, you know, be nice about it. Don't do it in a way that's going to get yourself in trouble. I'm not saying go out there and take on the authorities and get your head beaten in. But just live your own life. And if someone tries to interfere with you living your own life, ask them why. Ask them why they would suggest that you have to do anything else and why they believe they have a right of ownership over you. Because it's a mirror. And I suppose even saying that, I mean, I suppose it's easy for me to say that. But it's more difficult for people to do it because you've really got to be in the correct emotional state to be able to do that sort of stuff. And again, you've got to understand how reality works and realize that it's a mirror. It's an emotional mirror. Now, if you feel that confidence in yourself, then reality will mirror that confidence back to you. But you've actually got to be living it. You can't be pretending that you're confident. It's not like, okay, I'm just going to be confident and try to get through this. You've actually got to embody that confidence and know it. And when you know something, it isn't anything you have to believe or talk yourself into. It's just something that you know. But when you do know it and you can embody that confidence in yourself because you know what you are and you know who you are, you know what your connection to source is, then reality mirrors that back to you. But it goes both ways. It goes for all emotions that you feel. And if you are living in a state of fear, if you believe that this authority is real and that they are going to come and get you, then they will. That's just the way it works. Because it's all internal. That's why the matrix is internal. And that's how you can escape the matrix internally as well. As I was talking about before, the whole thing is a construct. It's all in your head. It's all how you approach reality, how you approach the energy field around you by the energy state that you are in. And this probably sounds all new age and esoteric to people, but it's literally how it works. As I've mentioned many times on the radio show, the meditation experience I had back in 2008 when I connected with everything and I realized that it was an emotional reality, emotionally based reality, there was an emotional language going on, this communication was going on between myself and the field, and that it would mirror back to me what my emotional state was. Yeah, and I got this message that I wanted to share with the world, so I just started sharing it. And then when I thought it would be good to be a radio host, I simply put myself in the energetic state where I was a radio host, and then reality mirrored that back to me, and I was suddenly a radio host. And I didn't do anything to become a radio host. That's just how it worked. And through the message, I just thought, well, I have no fear in delivering this message because it's a pure message. And it doesn't matter what happens to me from this point. It doesn't matter if I die delivering this message because this is the message and this is my path. And if you step onto your path, you'll find that reality just unfolds before you. And if you have no fear of death, well, it's going to lead you there eventually anyway, so why be in fear of it? It's the only part of life you can be guaranteed is actually going to happen. But the beauty of it and the clincher and the magic came in realizing that it's a mirror, that there is an emotional language going on all the time between you and the surrounding field around you, and it's a mirror. It's an energetic conversation that you are having every minute of every day, and it's a mirror because you control the input that is going into the field that is mirroring reality back to you. You control it, folks. So if you are someone who is confident and pure in yourself and you're pure in your heart, reality will guide you according to that path. You know, if you're giving to people, which is what I do, I live my life in a state of giving. The book that I wrote, I gave away for free. People who book me for speaking gigs, I let them pay me what they can. Sometimes they don't even pay me. Most of the time, they don't even pay me. But I just give the talk anyway because that's what I do. The Cambo that I serve to people, I don't charge people for Cambo. I let them give me a donation, whatever they think is right. But I would never charge them for the medicine. I won't charge people for anything that I do. That's why you go to my website. There's nothing there for sale. There's no monetizing on my YouTube account. I just give everything away for free because I know that it's a mirror and that if I'm in my heart and if I am pure in my thoughts and if I am pure in my intention and my motivation and guided by spirit and doing the right thing and my path is true, then reality will mirror that back to me and it will guide me and it will provide for me what I need to continue the journey and to continue delivering the message that I'm delivering. You know, if the message is wrong, if I step outside of that path, if I step outside of my heart, if I start doing the wrong thing, if I get caught in ego, if I ever get lost in the matrix and go back into it and my motivations don't become pure, the matrix will let me know. My heart will let me know. Reality will let me know because it will mirror that back to me. Things will start to go wrong in my life. Things will start to fall foul. Suddenly I won't find myself on the path anymore. I'll be floundering. I wonder what happened. I won't have any direction. And at the moment I don't even need to look for direction. I simply throw myself to the wind. And I ride on the breeze, and it always lands me where I'm supposed to land. And I don't change the way I approach things because I figure, well, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. So I just leave things the way they are. And sure, I mean, I don't expect to be able to do this forever. I expect they'll probably take me out one day. They're certainly taking everybody else out. They're certainly bringing people down. And I think the message that I deliver to YouTube and to the world, I think it's a pretty dangerous message for the system. I think it poses a real threat to the system. And I believe in the message, folks. I think it's a pure message. I really feel that if enough people heard this message, it would change the world. In fact, I know it would. I don't even feel it. I don't even believe it. I know that it would. Because it all comes down to this realization of the pureness of yourself and what your connection to Source is and what Source even is. You know, how you are all part of it, how we are all part of the one thing, part of a single consciousness. Now, back in 2010, I think, I put out a film called The Awakening where I went through all of this, how we are all connected to a single consciousness. You're just simply experiencing one frequency of reality. That's what all of us are here to do. This is why I finish every radio show with In Lakesh, because we are all indeed one. Even though we are all completely unique and completely individual and completely on our own journey and in our own center of our own universe, we are still all connected. We are all connected by the energy that we all ultimately come from. And that energy itself is Source, and that Source is you. That Source is me. That Source is everybody. Everything that is connected to the One, that which we would call God, for want of a better word. But it's there, and it's real, and you can feel it. You can experience. I have. I experienced it in meditation. I've experienced it several points in my life. When you get that pure connection to all that is, and you realize that you're on the right path, and you realize that it doesn't matter where it leads. It doesn't matter what comes here, what comes later, what came before. It doesn't matter what you believe you own or what you may believe you are in this world. What matters is what you do with the experience. And even with saying that, I mean, don't get me wrong. Sure, it's good to know our history and a lot of the stuff that I've gone through. I mean, a lot of the thoughts that I have on these radio shows, folks, you've got to understand these are all just random thought flows of whatever I happen to be thinking about at the day. But when you really look at yourself on a purely spiritual perspective, there is no past or future or present. It's all irrelevant. Time is just a construct. It's not really something you need to focus on. The only thing you need to know about time is in looking at this matrix and trying to figure out how the hell we got in this mess. That's the only reason I even look at history, because I'm trying to figure out a way out of the construct that we're locked in. And for us to be here, we have to know something of how we got here. But ultimately, there's so much more to that. There's so much more beyond that, so much deeper levels than that to experience and to comprehend and to ponder about what reality is, about what you are, about where consciousness comes from and what this experience is really for. I mean, it's a pretty deep esoteric topic to even consider discussing on air, I suppose. I seem to have gone way off on some esoteric tangent, but that's what you get, folks. It's an interesting topic, though. It is really interesting to think about all of this stuff. And, you know, it's really the key to the matrix. It's really the key to the whole thing, this loss of self, as I've gone over so many times on the show. And this is what the message has been aimed at the whole time, is helping people rediscover this power that they have within them. You know, the fact that people have been trained to believe they have no value. Or if they do have value, it's according to their economic value, according to what they've collected along the way, according to how successful they've been, according to the parameters provided to them by the system. And that's not really what it's about. That's not really what life is about at all. All this stuff is designed to lead you away from yourself. And it is in this rediscovery of the self that the whole matrix breaks down. You know, the whole control grid is based on people not having this knowledge of themselves. And that's why I've harped on about it so much for 10 years on the air here, because that's the way out. I mean, what's the point of delivering all of these other doorways and other rabbit holes and other pathways that will ultimately lead nowhere when the real path lies within and lies in the rediscovery of who and what you are? And I've used those words so many times on air that people are probably tired of hearing them. But I really don't know how else to put it. Like I said, folks, I'm very limited by the fact that I'm speaking English. A lot of the stuff that I feel inside, a lot of the stuff I want to say to you, I simply don't know the words to convey the emotions and to convey the feelings that I feel. They simply don't exist in English. As I said earlier, ladies and gentlemen, the scenario outlined in 1984, that is now. That's the world that we live in. The Newspeak language that they used in 1984, that is English. And that is being even more debased and more reduced now with the advent of texting, where all words are losing their spiritual meanings completely. All words are only having surface meanings, and it's a real dumbing down of human intellect that is happening as a result. And right across the board, it doesn't even matter, even if you don't speak English, it's happening in other languages as well, simply by the way people use these symbols for text and use one letter for a word, use abbreviations all the time, put in three letters rather than saying three words. All this sort of stuff, it may seem like convenient, it may seem natural to do it, but it all results in a dumbing down. It all results in a removal of thought processes and an impairing of cognitive function, which of course is exactly what it's designed to do. Now we've really had a number done on us, ladies and gentlemen. The entire species has had a number done on us, most especially the West. The West is being completely decimated, mainly through multiculturalism, which is all designed to bring down Western nations. They don't want the West here anymore, folks. They used the white people to go out and destroy the world, and now people are quite happy to see the white people destroy because of the damage they believe the white people have done. But it's all been one big play. Everyone's been set up to play each other off against each other so that the ruling Judaic system can control the world at the end of time. That's what they want to do, and they've been pretty successful up to this point, but I think a lot of people are actually waking up to what's actually going on now. But folks, I think we are almost at the end of this show here. It really does come around quickly when I get off on these esoteric rants and rambles and journeys that I go on, and I hope you could bear with me on that one today. I'll have to listen to it back and see where I actually went with it. Did cover a little bit of esoteric ground, and I'm not sure what the topic of this show was supposed to be. But I think it is important for people to look at things and to consider these concepts and to consider what they are as a spiritual being and how all of this construct, all of this matrix that they believe they have to obey, all the stuff that they believe controls them, really is a fiction. And it will be so easy for us to escape from this system if we would just collectively make the effort to do it. You know, it's all very well for one person to do it or a few people to do it. I know with all the stuff that I brought you today and saying, oh, you should step outside of the system and all this sort of stuff, it's all very well for me to say that. But, you know, I can do it to my degree and live my life the way I do. But even in saying that, I'm still dependent upon people to a certain degree who are within the system because, like, I've got to live somewhere. The guy, the place where I live, I mean, he has to own the house. He has to do the stuff that he has to do to buy the house and all that sort of stuff for me to live here. So, you know, I can't be too naive about it all. But even in that, I mean, I can see the system for what it is, and I can see how easy it would be if we were to collectively step outside of it. You know, I can do it to my degree and the way that I do, and I can get by. But I can realize that it's hard for a lot of people to do this. I mean, I've got to admit that I live a pretty unique, unusual sort of a lifestyle, that though it may certainly work for me, it probably would definitely not work for other people. So there's that to take into account. But still, all I can do is offer the perspective that I have and hope that there's something in there that people will get. Maybe there's someone else who's got another piece of the puzzle that they can combine with this, and maybe the light bulb will go off for the rest of humanity once they hear the message. And maybe, just maybe, if we can all just put these ideas out there and respect each other enough to consider all possibilities, well, maybe we'll find the way out. But that is it for me, folks. We are very close to the end of the show here. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all of my wonderful supporters, all the kind emails that you send me. Thank you to my Patreon supporters. You are the only people who keep this message flowing. Again, I will be speaking at Anacapulco in February next year. That'll be the only talk that I'm doing next year. I'm doing a talk in Byron Bay, if you happen to be in Australia. That will be in mid-January sometime. And then after that, I will be doing Anacapulco in Mexico in February. And that will be the end of my talks for 2019. No trips to England or Europe next year, folks. I really do want to stay home and get some work done on these films and get some work done on my health as well. But do come to Byron Bay if you happen to be in Australia in mid-January and check out the talk there. And if you can get to an Acapulco in February in Mexico, it's going to be a great gig, folks, and I really do recommend that you come along to that. Again, there is a banner to that gig on my website, thecrowhouse.com. If you go there and click that banner and use the coupon CROWHOUSE, you'll get yourself a discount on the ticket. But that is it for me, folks. I have completely run out of time. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.